Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Ned Bolting.
I'm Laura Laker.
And I'm Adam Tranter.
And this time I have a confession to make.
Come on, Ned.
Well, you know it.
What happened?
You know what happened.
This is just for dramatic effect.
This is just for dramatic effect.
Talk us through it.
Well, when was it? About 2-3 weeks ago? Yeah. We recorded a podcast and it was my idea actually to record a podcast without a portfolio, so sort of busk it, wing it a little bit and just chew the cud on whatever sort of takes our fancy. And I think we all really enjoyed it and it was a good pod. I came away thinking it was great, but it was a slightly ad hoc arrangement and I don't know why we weren't using the regular studio that we're using now. For some reason we decided to record elsewhere and that necessitated me bringing my podcast equipment that is mine and belongs to me and that I use when I record Never Strays Far. So we did that, but it was really good
content. It was a great episode, yeah.
And I shoved everything in my pannier on my bike and cycled the 4 or 5 miles home, and I took a shortcut I don't often take. And I do have this slight habit with panniers of not, and also I'd borrowed a pannier, so it wasn't my regular pannier. And it's got one of the kind of quite complicated way of doing up the top bit.
Okay.
That involves kind of threading bits in a slightly cantridge. Okay. And anyway, I thought it's fine, it's heavy, it won't, so nothing will happen. The pannier stayed on the bike, but it wasn't quite shut. And the bag that contained all the podcast equipment, the microphones, the recorder, and obviously hidden within the recorder, the SD card that had the digital information, to wit, your voice, Laura, your voice, Adam, and my voice, i.e. the podcast, all bounced off into the dark Deptford night over a very aggressive speed bump that is there to slow motorised traffic and shouldn't really get in the way for cyclists. But it was a bit too... So I realised that I must have ridden on for about a mile and a half, and for some reason I stopped at some lights and looked down at my pannier and realised that everything was missing. So I turned around, retraced my steps, and in the 10 or so minutes, someone had had it. It had gone from the side of the road. They'd seen shiny cables and microphones.
It's sort of weirdly specialist though, isn't it? I like the idea,
minutes later it was being sold down a pub for a fiver.
Probably. It's quite expensive equipment.
I'll sell it to you for fiver or £4 with the Streets Ahead.
Anyway, I was mortified and I do apologise to you. I had to, it was partly having the expense of having to replace all the equipment, but more than that, a good podcast went missing.
It was a good podcast, but these things happen. Sometimes it happens.
But the format was good though, so I suggest we recreate that.
They're
good fun. They're about today's current affairs, so they could be about anything.
Let's start with this, Adam. I follow you on social media. You're a very reasonable person to follow on social media. You don't get dragged into the darker underbelly of having rows and stuff like that. And you only ever sort of post if there's something to say. And I did notice the other day, it caught my eye that you'd been bike riding with Andy Street again.
Yes.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Well, we went on a bike. Obviously, Laura wasn't aware, but I
wasn't aware. I haven't really been on social media. All sorts of things passed me by.
You've been busy, haven't you, doing other stuff?
Yeah.
You know about this, Laura, but you didn't see the picture. Me and Andy Street, Mayor of the West Midlands, went on a little bike ride around some of the areas around HS2 construction to have a look at what's been done and also what's possible to create a HS2 cycleway.
This is very exciting.
From Coventry, yeah.
I interrupted you. From Birmingham to Coventry via Kenilworth.
Via Solihull and then Kenilworth and then on to Coventry, yeah. So it really connects. It connects four boroughs, if you like. And it will, in future, repurpose the haul roads, so the roads that HS2 are using for constructions for their lorries, maintenance tracks, the stuff that will always be there so that people can get onto the tracks to maintain them, and connect the bits in the middle, working with local authorities. So it's a big project, big vision, and basically everyone in the region, all the local authorities said, yep, we want to do this. And our ask is that HS2 space-proof, what's called space-proofing, so that they design it in to their, not to the railway itself, but the stuff next to it, and they obviously repurpose the haul roads.
Because they would just be taking them apart otherwise. They would have been digging them up otherwise. They're actually building more road than rail,
in fact. There's HS2. Loads of them, and they can be used really strategically. And of course, a lot of people who live very close to HS2 don't get any of the benefits. You know, they might live in the middle of it, but not in the bit that they can get on it. So having some local transport options seems like a really good thing to do.
So these haul roads, it's a new word, never heard that before, but these haul roads then join some sort of A road that's obviously they need to get close, and then they're new roads that just join up to the track. So
yeah.
Does that mean that they all filter into a cycle track that runs along the tracks as well, or not? Or is that not the case?
So they can do. I think haul roads, it's easy to, as the name says, sort of think of them as roads, but actually they're more likely to be vast swathes of land that the roads can actually and are often moved around dependent on the need at the time.
Oh, okay,
some of them might go right up to a certain point, some of them might get decommissioned and then moved over, but effectively it's the land and space around the track that's being built.
Mm.
I think the most likely scenario and you know the opportunity is that much of it will follow what's called the HS2 trace, so the kind of the line on the map where the railway will be, sort of adjacent.
Mm.
But there will be scenarios where it might go over or under some of the tunnelling. For example, it might leave part of that network to join, you know, another cycle path on, you know, next to the highway, for example. So it's not as simple as saying you'll be able to cycle along the HS2 track, you know.
Yeah.
But it's
between the trains.
Some of it will be adjacent to the HS2 track. Which is very normal in high-speed trains. If you look at high-speed infrastructure in Germany, you know, quite often the maintenance paths are allowed for, you know, bridleway style usage, and they're paved. So, you know, this is just about getting as much benefit as possible out of this massive construction project. And it was you, Laura, that kind of, when this first was mooted,
2018.
Yeah, you wrote a story on it and showed that it had more return on investment.
Five times better return on investment than the railway itself.
Which is
amazing. Most of that would be in local benefits, basically, to communities who'd be separated from their neighbours by the railway track and who would suddenly be able to, if they built the route, travel between villages and towns and cities on bicycle routes. But yeah, it's really common overseas. Belgium, they've got a good network in around the Brussels area. And the great thing about railway tracks is they're flat and direct, and one company owns the land usually, and so it's quite easy. You don't get all of the land negotiation trouble that you might get otherwise, and then the local councils are on board with connecting it into the local road network and on-road cycle tracks. And there's a 1930 cycleway, you told me, heading into Coventry, Carlton Reed's territory.
Yeah. I mean,
his research. And then they're going to revamp that, and it's really exciting because this is such a fantastic project. It's a huge piece of national cycling infrastructure potentially that could have linked, well, Manchester and London, but now I guess it's going to be Birmingham, London, if it's anything. And nobody's really backed it in the way that Andy Street has in a sort of big strategic regional way.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting to see. And we don't really see this in this country.
But it's only going to be, sounds huge. It's going to be Coventry to Birmingham. That section of the line.
It's like 24 miles, 23, 24 miles.
Yeah, there are plans to nothing to do with me, but there are plans to look at similar routes in the Chilterns. So this stuff is happening. I think the observation I would make is that there's lots of potential, and a layperson, possibly like myself, would look at it, the potential, and go, right, well, you want to build a route from there to there, don't you? Whereas the railway industry treats it as, you know, 100 different lots and areas that aren't connected to each other. So actually it takes the vision to bring it all together, but also the coordination to make sure, because of course when we're cycling or walking, we don't care who owns the land or if I'm in a certain council's territory or something like that. They just want to be able to use it. So coordination is going to be the key thing here. And I think, you know, the original plan back in 2018 when you were writing about it, although it's been de-scoped, was for this to kind of be part of, you know, the national project and funded. Unfortunately, that was de-scoped. So our view in the West Midlands is picking up the baton. And as long as HS2 and the Department of Transport can space-proof it, which is going to cost, you know, considerably like less than any other project they're working on, we're talking tiny bits of money, then that enables us, once the railway is complete, to try and secure a business case, get capital funding and build something that I think people would love. So, yeah.
And I believe there's bits in Oxfordshire that are being built as well.
Cool.
I don't think they want to call it the HS2 cycleway because the railway line itself has become so controversial. But they are kind of doing the same thing. And yeah. I know that bits and bobs of it further south have been built. And so, yeah, if you can connect them up, it would be quite magnificent.
Definitely no-brainer territory. Laura mentioned the 1930s cycleway. That was this thing recently that I was sort of fascinated by just for a moment, is one of the areas it's going to take from the HS2 cycleway into Coventry City Centre is a cycle lane that was built in 1936. And it was funded by the Ministry of Transport. And Carlton Reid, who is a historian, cyclist historian, would like mudlarking, actually.
He would love it, wouldn't he? He's a historian.
We should have invited him. He has been commissioned to do it's been worked by the Department for Transport, but also a bit of crowdfunding to do a lot of research into these old cycleways. And yeah, one of them is in use today still from the 30s, and it can be, you know, going to upgrade it and make it kind of LTN 120 compliant, you know, that with the modern day standards, so it would have priority over the side roads, that kind of thing. But it was fascinating because I was at the bottom, he's got a couple of newspaper snippets and articles. And other than the slightly old English, you could read those news stories and it would be like you were reading them today.
What do you mean?
People saying that we are, you know, deeply concerned that a cycleway will spoil the countryside and it will be nothing more than a cyclist's racetrack. all of these quite common, you know, common arguments.
I'm sure they had for roads as well at the time.
Well, one of the things was that cognitive dissonance, if you like, was there as well, because one of the newspaper articles was talking about the beauty of the road and why it shouldn't be touched. And then the same article was saying, but we should widen the road for everybody. And then cyclists would get a benefit as well. So that even that level of like gaslighting was still there in the 30s. Like we would benefit from that, which is sort of what happens now with pothole funding. Sort of take all your active travel funding, use it on potholes, and then say, well, it helps
there
you as
go.
Well, doesn't it, cyclists?
One of the candidates it's a slight diversion. I've got lots of questions about this, but one of the candidates in my local borough who we just had a mayoral election.
Oh, yeah. Lewisham. Lewisham Mayor's become an MP, hasn't he?
Yeah, he went and stood in the Kingsdale, whatever it was called, the Kingsmeet, whatever it was called.
Bristol.
He won. So we needed a new mayor and we just had an election. And I did do my due diligence and I read every candidate's manifesto. And I can't remember which candidate it was, actually. They didn't get my vote. But one of their arguments was they wanted to remove all LTNs and they wanted to abolish all 20-mile-an-hour zones in Lewisham.
It's always one, isn't it?
No, there were lots of candidates who said the same thing.
Okay.
Very few didn't. But also, quite interestingly, they wanted to remove speed bumps on all Lewisham roads for the benefit and safety of cyclists.
Yeah,
lovely.
Thank you.
Mind you,
at least they won't lose their podcast equipment.
They had my best interests at heart. But that was just gaslighting, wasn't it?
You know,
the reason we want to get rid of speed bumps is for the cyclists.
Yeah.
And it might have a knock-on effect for car drivers as well.
I don't know.
Throw them a bone.
But that would be not the point. Yeah. Anyway.
Who won?
The Labour candidate, I can't remember her name. She, on International Women's Day, they elected the first black. Lewisham has a very large, it's got lots of different immigrant populations, but perhaps the biggest of them all is the kind of Windrush generation.
Yeah.
And Lewisham is now elected the first black female mayor in its history, which is about time too, really.
Well, progress.
So I hope she does well, because I think anyone could pin on a Labour rosette and kind of like get into Lewisham one way or another. It's a hugely Labour.
Yeah. What did she say about LTNs? Did she...
Pass, actually. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I didn't,
wasn't a major
didn't
part of the manifesto.
No, she was quieter.
That's the sort of thing, really, because for most people, it's just not a thing, is it? It's,
yeah.
The evidence seems to suggest some polling, all sorts of polling, is that people either absolutely love it or absolutely hate it, but the proportion of people who are actually motivated by it is tiny.
Yes, maybe, and they're just extremely
noisy. Most people are like, what's an LTN?
Yes, that's very true. That's very true.
Yeah. Do we want to ask you about what you're bringing to the show and tell?
No, I'm still going. Okay, I haven't finished with him.
Cut that.
I'm pointing at Adam.
Okay.
It sounds to me like it's interesting. Before you started talking about Carlton and his research into the 1930s, which I kind of said it's really valuable stuff that he's doing there, and very kind of informative.
Mm. Yeah.
But I was about to say this sounds like potentially the biggest bit of kind of, if you like, non-urban or semi-rural infrastructure since the 1930s, specifically for bikes. Would that be right?
For the HSE cycleway?
Yeah.
Like I think something of that scale.
It's those kind of communities, small towns, villages, smaller towns, conurbations it sounds like it's trying to join up over these 24 miles.
Yeah, I would say that...
In a way that they're not really catered for.
Yeah, I would say that it feels like a mighty project that sort of stands out as something that's not rarely done. I would say that, and Laura's the literal expert on this with the National Cycling Network.
Yes.
And, you know, I guess it's use of disused railway lines, which is sort of different, but it's sort of seemingly quite piecemeal. So, you know, we can afford to do 2 miles or 3 miles here. And not to say that the HS2 cycleway can be achieved in one go. If it's realised, it will be over, you know, it will have to be built bit by bit just from a logistical point of view. And the NCN is, you know, I think a really good asset, but it doesn't feel like a national piece of infrastructure. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah,
with that.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of doesn't. It doesn't. I mean, it's. I guess it's planned by a national body, a charity, in a sense. But then it doesn't really have the funding or the lot. You can't really do long term planning because you don't have the year on year funding.
Yeah.
Whereas with what you're doing with Dundee Street in the West Midlands, there is going to be that plan.
Yes.
You're going to apply for the funding and you're going to have a multi-year plan and you're going to roll out the cycleway. But yeah, we don't really do this. And it usually has been, the decent ones usually have been old railway tracks connected up to roads or on existing roads. And yeah, you're right, Ned, nothing is really built for cycling from scratch. I mean, even if it's being repurposed.
It sounds like the majority of these miles and kilometres are going to be dedicated cycle lanes. And you're not going to be sharing. So a lot of the National Cycle Network is just quiet roads, isn't it?
Just quiet roads. Mm. Yeah, or even not very quiet roads sometimes.
Not very quiet roads. And if anyone, someone written a book about
that.
Come on.
That'd be great, wouldn't
take
it?
Take this opportunity. It's arisen organically.
It's staring us in the face.
Yeah.
Okay.
When's it out?
I'm going to do it.
When's your book out?
May the 9th.
And what's it called?
Potholes and Pavements, A Bumpy Ride on Britain's National Cycle Network.
And what have you been doing today and over the last 3 days?
Reading the audiobook.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And you're nearly finished. One more day.
Yeah, one more day.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so good.
Very exciting. I know, it's exciting.
That is so good.
I've read it. It's very good. Have you read it yet?
I've read half of it on holiday. I don't read unless I'm on holiday.
Right.
And I haven't been on holiday since.
So I've read now.
Get the audiobook.
This is going to sound offensive, actually. I don't
know. What are you going to say?
my kids think it's funny that, like, I was in London that weekend and, you know, I'm taking photos of tactile pavings and bollards.
Yeah,
and they think it's hilarious. I don't have a Kindle. I use my son's Kindle.
Right.
So he's reading all his books and occasionally mine pop up.
Yeah.
And he thinks that he's like, Potholes and Pavements, like, lol, like, isn't that funny, Dad? That sounds like right up your street. I'm like, yes, it is.
It is, like, actually.
So I've got it on the Kindle and I will finish it at half term when I'm off for the next bit.
Good. That occurred to me, though, that the one example I can think of that stands out as something we haven't really talked about, maybe we should visit it, is Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't talk about that in the book either, actually.
What,
yeah.
The Redways.
Yeah. So I once a year, I do a darts broadcast in Milton Keynes, spend a few days there in January.
And MK
Bowl. And I take my bike up on the train and I kind of get around Milton Keynes on these Redways. And I have to say, I know it's January when I'm there, so it's maybe not representative, but I'm pretty much the only cyclist.
Yeah, yeah. I heard this.
And they weird, and they yeah. are a little, I mean, some of them are great, some of them are a little bit crumbly, but they're still there and they're kind of signed. And it was designed, wasn't it, Milton Keynes?
Mm. Yeah.
For precisely that. And they're not just bits of painted bits on they are segregated cycle lanes.
Yeah.
And Stevenage is similar as well. They've got a similar
different
plan
decade,
town.
Though, isn't it? A lot of this in Milton Keynes was in the 80s.
Oh, okay.
And 80s and 90s, wasn't it? Or, yeah.
I think Stevenage wasn't Stevenage the 60s and 70s. I mean, it is obviously different. You're not wrong. Yeah. But it's not.
I think Stevenage goes back to the 30s, doesn't it? Some of
does
the original
it?
Kind of new town.
When the cycle lanes are put in, Carlton knows about this because he's written about it.
Straying into Carlton's territory.
We'll have a look at
full
that.
Full on Carlton,
but maybe we should go to Milton Keynes.
I think we should. It's
I've never been, actually. Yeah. Never been to Milton Keynes. No, I don't think so. No, never.
I was talking about Milton Keynes on my other podcast on Never Strays Far with David Miller the other day, because he grew up in the ex-professional road racer. He grew up in Biarritz and Hong Kong and all sorts of glamorous places like this. And I thought he would just glaze over and look blankly at me and not know what I was talking about. I started talking about McDonald's in Milton Keynes, and he went, "I've been there." You haven't? He goes, "No, I have." And like,
McDonald's one.
It was one of
Milton
the first,
Keynes too.
It was one of the first McDonald's
unlikely.
In the country, and it used to be a massive. I'm literally repeating content from Never Strays Far on this podcast.
Couple of things about no, I'm going to segue from Milton Keynes, but I was just worried that our listeners might leave and listen to your other podcast.
that was the idea.
Stony Stratford is a small
coaching
town outside of Milton Keynes,
yes.
And it is
It's on the Grand Union Canal, isn't it?
Yes, and it is apparently the origin of the phrase "a cock and bull story." Did you know that?
No.
There's two pubs called the Cock and the Bull. And they're opposite each other. And the story goes is that people would go from one pub to another, sort of sharing stories, and they would either be not true or, you know, slightly more truthful than the previous one. And that's where the phrase "a cock and bull story" comes from.
Do you know what we should do?
Go to a cock and bull story.
Yes.
Go to the pubs. But
we should do this podcast with Alexi Sale, friend of Streets Ahead podcast. Do you remember?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I did an interview with.
Of course.
Because Alexi, I think even in the interview I did back in the day, you'd have to go back and listen. I think he tells a story that when he first made a bit of money in his TV career back in the early 80s, and I think he just married or something.
So yeah.
Him and his wife went, "Well, we've done London now. We've done Stoke Newington. We made a bit of money. Let's go and live in the country." And they went and lived in Milton Keynes.
Wow.
For a year and a half, went mad and came back to London. But when he was doing, when Alexi was doing his YouTube rides, which I think he's
during lockdown and stuff.
Yeah, during lockdown. He carried it on a little bit afterwards. I think he's kind of petered out on that a bit. He went to Milton Keynes and did a little ride around Milton Keynes on the Redways. I'm sure he'd be amenable to doing it again.
I remember watching this because he was sort of like, ended up like in a car park, and he was like, "What the hell am I doing here?" Because the Redways couldn't get out.
And I know exactly what he means when you arrive at the station and try and find your way out into the Redways. You can't find the Redways. You just end up sort of bimbling around the car park for ages. So maybe we'll get Alexi. I'll send him a message.
See what he says.
I had a meeting, an informal meeting with people from Milton Keynes Council who came to the West Midlands to sort of talk about cycling infrastructure and stuff. And where I got to with it was that, and well, obviously if we do an episode, I will explore it in much more detail, but the fact that a lot of them are quite remote from the main carriageway network. So they're not lit as well. So they a lot of them go underpasses.
Yes, there's a lot of underpasses.
Feel safe. But also that driving is just very, very easy. Like in Stevenage, there is so much capacity for motor vehicles that there is no friction in terms of like, I will try something else because I'm bored of getting stuck in congestion.
That seems to be the
summary of it. But
makes me wonder if I lived there, if I would still cycle or if I would end up like everyone else driving. Probably unlikely. But maybe the underpasses are really scary.
Yeah, I mean, in the nighttime, like, you know, like near where I am, you know, occasionally, well, I'll give you an example. I went for a few drinks with a friend and ended up going there along the canal towpath on my bike and coming in a beautiful summer's day.
But then,
you know, leaving at like 9 o'clock at night and it was pitch black and thinking,
this is really
I'm
dicey.
I'm not going to do this. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not going to do it. I'm
and
not
going to
ask other
people. Well, yeah, but I'm not going to ask other people to do it either.
No, it's a fair point.
And you've moved past that phase in the West Midlands now, so
not on the
canal towpath anymore. You've got bigger fish to fry. You've got the railways
and the main roads.
And the main roads, yeah. Just going for it. It's great. Exactly. It's very exciting.
So, right, well, we're off to Milton Keynes. That's sort of
yeah. Well, who's around in Milton Keynes from our listenership who can arrange sponsorship to pay for our train tickets, or just meet and greet us, maybe get a little posse together. Put a bit of thought into it.
If you're in Milton Keynes or you know about Milton Keynes, drop us a message on Twitter @podstreetsahead or email us as hello@streetsaheadpod.com.
I think my friend Lasse lives in or used to live in Milton Keynes. We used to go cycling together. I haven't seen him for ages. Maybe I'll drop him a line. Give us a little tour.
What else is happening in active travel world, Laura?
I had my bike stolen. Yeah, are we going to do this?
Yeah, well,
we've done it.
Yeah.
We've done it though, haven't we?
No, because we did talk about it, but it got dropped into the depth of night.
Do you want to hear it again?
Sold. Yes.
So, sad story.
I'm interested.
My 1-year-old bike locked it outside a cafe where I was working in Aldgate.
Describe the lock.
It wasn't the best e-lock, but...
Was it gold rated?
No, I don't think it would have been.
How much did you spend on it?
I can't remember. I think it was like 30 or 40 quid. It wasn't great. I've got good locking technique. I have got a heavier lock, but then you get lazy and I think I don't want to carry the heavy one because it's obviously I'm going to drag it around. Stupid thing. It was the middle of the day. Locks it up, put it through the back wheel and the frame and then put a little chain thing, cable. Yes, that's the word. Anyway, so yeah, left it in the morning, came back at about 3 PM, it was gone. It was like the lock was still there on the floor. It had been cut. Cable was there, no bike.
I'm really sorry.
It's a terrible feeling.
Listening to it for the second time, I'm still really sorry.
It's very sad.
I want to apologise. I was slightly victim blaming you there.
What,
my
your
first
lock?
Approach was like...
No, but you're right. Because basically, once it's gone, it's very unlikely you're going to get it back. What you have to do is good locking technique, good lock. I mean, but the thing is, even if I use my best lock, So I went on a bit of an investigation, went to the building next door, found the CCTV, found the security guys. They found the CCTV, told me 11:38, three guys turned up with an angle grinder. 11:40, they cut the lock and they were off with the bike.
Yeah,
and they kind of scope out the rack. They have a guy that goes around, looks at the locks, gets on the phone, some guys turn up. So basically, with most locks, it's a case of seconds. So you might have a great lock, but then it would just take a couple more seconds than it would if you had my 30, 40 quid lock. And I do know I should have used a best lock and I wouldn't recommend using. There is actually one lock that apparently degrades angle grinder blades called the light lock.
Yeah, I saw the hip lock have one as well. There's a couple on the market now, but they are.
What about the Kryptonite New Yorker?
No.
That's still
surprisingly easy to cut to through, into. Apparently. Yeah, because I spoke to Titus Halliwell, who is the head of this kind of cycle task force. In the Metropolitan Police.
Right.
And he was telling me about this and he was saying, yeah, you've got to get the one that's... Angle grinders are rife in this country now. Cycle thieves are using it and they're quite organised. So anyway, the bike's gone. So basically, what you need to do if you don't want your bike stolen, good locking practices. Generally, if it's a nice bike, try not to lock it up in public. Because once it's gone, get the frame number.
It was quite a nice bike, wasn't it?
It was red and shiny. It was too nice for London.
Red and shiny, yeah.
Basically. Oh. But there is some good news generally about cycle thefts because there has been some action from police. I think a lot of people think police don't care. They are trying. And cycle thefts reported in England and Wales between 2010 and 2023 were down 54%. And that's a random survey of...
Weird, isn't it?
...of people. So it's not like just people reporting.
Maybe all the it's nice a random ones have been
survey. But then there has been some really good successful police operations to try and do it. But yeah, it's still like 77,313 bikes were stolen in 2022, 23. That's a lot. One every 7 minutes.
And it's a lot of people who just won't cycle again.
71% of victims never even report the theft. Yeah, and that's like one of the number one reasons people don't cycle again.
So true, isn't it? I took a bike to university. I took my mum's bike to university and I had it nicked, my own fault, I'm sure, within about 3 weeks. I had gone. And that kickstarted, let's do the dates. That kickstarted a 15-year completely cycle-free part of my life. I didn't get on a bike for the next 15 years.
Yeah, it's such a big thing. In 2010, the Met Police started this kind of cycle task force and the two things they wanted to fix, basically, were road danger and cycle theft, the two reasons that people don't cycle or stop cycling in London. And they were, they are really big ones. And it's your story is really common because it's expensive.
Yeah.
And you might replace it, but then you might think, I'm not going to lock it up again.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. This was the sixth bike I've lost in there.
You are cursed, aren't you?
I don't know how many years in London, 15 years in London.
I've never had a single bike. Nick. I know. That's just tempting fate, isn't it?
One of them I'd forgot to lock. Two of them I forgot to lock, actually.
Oh.
One had a bad lock.
Do you ever do the, if you your local shop or something, do you ever just lean the bike outside and pop in?
No.
I do where I live.
I'm too paranoid.
Yeah, but you live in a rural little where everyone knows everyone else's name and they come bring cakes around to each other and say, you're right, Mr. So-and-so.
Yeah. Hey, that's Mr. Trance's bike.
That's it.
I don't know what accent that was. I live literally in the West Midlands.
I don't know.
Whereas, yeah, in the big bad metropolis. I do. I do, but I do kind of like, I'm anxious about it.
It takes a second, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It takes a second.
Just recently, in some other good news of bike theft.
I don't want to live in a world where even that isn't possible.
No.
So I'm like, it's almost a point of principle with me that I kind of can't accept the reality that this is actually probably evidentially a very stupid thing to do. And I'm actually just I'm running down my luck here because sooner or later someone's going to just have it. But I kind of like still would prefer at this point just to be the person who does lean a bike up against the shop window and pops into the shop.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
You know?
Your idyllic life.
It's a bit like, maybe I'm just running my luck at, you know? But anyway.
I don't know. I don't want to like, I don't want to
it's like
disillusion
that game,
you.
It's like that game Clock Patience. Do you ever play that?
No.
Where you lay all the cards out and the clock face sort of thing. And it's all about turning up. You don't want to turn up kings. Can't remember why. So you kind of like take it, turning up. And it's just a question of beating the odds. It's incredibly hard to get out. There's no skill in it whatsoever. But you know.
Like the Milton Keynes car park.
Yeah. And you know eventually you're going to get all four kings out and they'll be at the end of the game.
That's right. You can't control it.
Anyway, sorry.
In some other good news for bike theft, just quoting City of London Police on the 9th of February 2024. And the point on this is that how much of this is gang related and how if you tackle the gangs, you can make a big dent in bike theft. Organised crime. Yeah. Mastermind behind an organised crime gang which handled and stole bikes in the City of London has been sentenced to 2 years and 9 months in a London Crown Court. They're from Orpington, a police operation in 2020 found the gang had stolen more than £100,000 worth of bikes over a two-year period. And during the gang's crime spree...
You're just reading this news story, aren't you?
Well, it's great podcasting.
Well, I mean, I just feel like I'm reading the news. This is important.
£100,000 worth of bikes, that's two in Richmond Park, isn't it?
That's exactly. Anyway, we now go to the traffic and travel.
Well, good news that bike theft isn't quite the epidemic that it
is. It's not as bad as you think.
Yeah, except in your personal life.
Yeah, in my personal life.
Last time you told an amazing story about you fronting down a...
I did.
You tracked them down, you saw it was for sale, you arranged a meeting.
Exactly.
And then you had a weird story where your friend didn't quite back you up and you kind of couldn't quite... You didn't want to take the risk and you could see your bike just there.
It was right there.
I thought it was quite brave of you.
Yeah. I think I was just like so full of adrenaline. I think it was my first bike that I'd really liked that I'd lost. Mm-hmm. And a friend found it on Gumtree and it was an unusual colour. And he said, Laura, I think this is your bike. And he worked for the LCC at the time. So he was like, he knew about cycle theft and how it works. It was like just like a very kind of bog standard advert. They'd copied and pasted everything from the Trek website. And it was just obviously not their bike, basically stock image. So I've called around. The friend who was available was this lovely friend, Kim, who is very sweet, but she's kind of a bit dippy. So we went there, she on her Brompton, me on foot, because my bike had been stolen. And we arrived outside this pub, the pub on the park in London Fields. And we waited and I said, look, if it's my bike, I'll look at you. And then we'll grab our bikes and ride off and he'll be on foot so he can't chase us. So basically we turned up there, the guy turned up, it's my bike. It's still got my light on from the day before. And so I'm shaking. I'm trying to make small talk. Yeah. I'm just shaking with the adrenaline. And eventually I kind of get on the bike and I sit on it. And he's like, oh, it fits you very well.
Funny guy.
He's like, it's really nice. I rode it over here. It's a nice bike. And I was like, yes, I know you little... So I've ridden this bike a lot. So anyway, I'm looking at Kim. Kim's folded up her Brompton and is standing very comfortably to the side. I'm looking at her and she's just looking at me blank. Like
with
she hasn't.
Folded Brompton.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, I can't ride off because then Kim will be there. He's already looking at her Brompton saying what a nice bike it looks. Can't just leave her there with this bike thief. God knows what he'll do. So in the end, I sent him off and I'm like, oh, Kim, that was my bike, by the way. She's like, no way. So there was a cycle task force. This cycle task force had just started up at the time. So I was trying to get a hold of her. She's so sweet. It was like, it was funny because I, you know, she was like number five of the people I call who was available. So yeah, I tried to find the cycle task force. Because was the basically, you choose the guys first, right? You choose the guys who are like a bit bigger.
Come on, we can't let that stand. All right, well, maybe. Big strong guys who'd cycle down.
In the end, my
canal pass in the dark.
Yeah, my hunch about Kim was right, though, because she wasn't much help in that situation. So, yeah, she's very sweet, but yeah, she's not. She's never going to make a policewoman.
Or even a good
friend. Is that horrible? Ned, you seem really shocked.
I am quite sure I was seeing a different side to you, Laura.
Mm.
Yeah. And also a different side. Bromptons aren't always the useful, practical solution to every problem.
Only if you have them unfolded they're a quick getaway.
You just ridden off, sprinted off, you try to unfold a Brompton.
Hold on a minute.
I'm like, Kim, I tried to warn you. It's too late. Goodbye. Yeah, because that's the kind of guy I am. Yeah, so anyway, I tried to get hold of the police task force, which just started up. And they said, okay. Get the guy back. We'll come over. And when he turns up, we can like, we'll like hide around the corner. And I was like, brilliant. So I called him back and the bike had been sold. He'd sold it to someone.
Oh.
I know. And that was it. I was so, so sad. I was so devastated. It was such an adrenaline rush evening. And I wrote a blog about it at the time. And I just remember I was heartbroken. Mm. Just crying. It was very sad. But yeah, I mean, that was, and then occasionally I'd see a bike of the same colour. And I think that's mine. I never wrote down the frame number like an idiot.
Yeah.
Later realised the lovely bike shop had put it on my receipt. And when my bike was stolen earlier this year, I also called the bike shop because once again, even though I know better, I had not written down the frame number.
Yeah.
Called up the bike shop. I was like, don't suppose. And they're like, yep, got it. Here
great
it
bike
is.
Shop. Good bike shop. Give the
really
bike shop
good
a
bike
plug.
Shop on your bike, London Bridge.
Oh, yeah, they're going to... world class there.
Yeah, and, they're great. They built my adventure bike. They fixed my e-bike.
Yeah.
And they've done. I actually bought the bike from there in the first place, as you know. Yeah, so yeah.
Get it on bike register as well, I think.
Yeah, I put it on bike register. Yeah, I did this all retrospectively. Should have done it when I bought it.
You never know.
It's unlikely it'll ever come back, but at least, you know.
In some countries, it's the law that when a bike is sold, that it has to be registered with a...
In France, it's been quite database. Successful. Yeah, I think they've got like the majority of bikes now, because it's been 4 years. Majority of bikes now are registered. So, yeah. That's
there
true.
We go.
Yes. Ned, I don't feel like we've heard from you apart from
what
you said about Milton Keynes.
I mean, I've been here, there, and everywhere. I've been fiddling around with a book idea that's kind of like bubbling away that I'm not quite sure about, but it's been very interesting. It's taken me to France on a couple of occasions. I'm off tomorrow I'm spending 5 days in Italy. I've got a bike race to commentate on Wednesday, Milano Torino, which is the oldest professional bike race in the world. And then I'm going from there to San Remo for the end of Milano San Remo, which is the first of the monuments and the most predictable bike race on earth.
How come?
Because it's only one thing you can do with it to try and win it.
Right.
And that's wait for 289 kilometres and then attack on the Poggio.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Sprint finish.
And it's a kind of selective group that's
small sprint finish.
Okay.
But from an active travel point of view, it gives me an opportunity to run. I'll run, actually. I have hired bikes and occasionally ridden it, and it's stunning. But on this occasion, I'll just run, and it's a bit of a tradition. I will run down the old, talking about the Sustrans model of disused railway lines. There's an old railway line that runs down the Ligurian coast. So San Remo is just over the border from Nice in the Italian Riviera into Liguria, and there is a old railway line that goes, I think, all the way down as far as Genoa, sort of like 80, 90, 100 kilometres, that has now been turned into a cycle track. And the actual high-speed train line has been moved inland a little bit. So but it was a 19th century train line that just cuts in and out of all that very rocky headland.
Wow.
So you cut through tunnels, go through like that.
Wow.
It's amazing.
I bet it's beautiful.
It's an amazing experience. So
you're
going to
run it?
Great. I'll run a bit of it, and then I'll cut inland and I'll run back over the Poggio hill. And then so that's my.
How long will that take you?
An hour and
a half. How far is it? Oh, okay. You're not doing.
No.
That sounds amazing.
Well, that's a little tradition of mine. That's my recon.
You're still doing a lot of running. Still running regularly.
Yeah, I was down in. I was working last weekend down in Exmoor in near Minehead, your old gaff, yeah?
Exactly.
And I was running in very muddy and wet conditions on Exmoor, and it kind of broke me. I did three consecutive days of slogging around Exmoor, and I kind of like thought, what am I doing?
This is far too hard. As well, yeah.
So steep as
It's so steep.
Porlock Hill, places
like
that.
Oh, my word. Yeah, that's steep. A hell of a hill.
Have you ever ridden up Porlock Hill?
I have, actually. My sister and I took my sister on a press trip years ago. We hired mountain bikes. We went up the back of Porlock Hill. There's an old toll road.
Mm.
And it's absolutely beautiful. I think it's kind of old, like the kind of English rainforest that there's a book about now.
Okay.
But we ended up having to push and wait and catch our breath and then push another few feet. But it was incredible. I mean, we had a great walk.
Yeah.
With weights. But yeah, it's gorgeous part of the country.
Going
love
back
it
to
there.
Milan, you wrote quite a bit during lockdown on
yeah,
Milan,
of course, Milan.
The cycling things. Have you heard much recently? Was it a big idea that's not been followed up, or do you think it's now a cycling city? I'm interested.
No, I was invited back. You
tomorrow.
Can find out, okay. Ned.
Can you?
I'll
can you
let
us know
tomorrow?
I bet your recording kit might get an episode out of it.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'm taking that. Yeah.
Because they're doing a lot of work on kind of plazas and stuff, I think. Yeah. And I'm not sure about the bike lanes.
I go there fairly often. I'll have a look. I'll see how the land lies.
Yeah.
And I'll report back.
Yeah.
How about that?
That would be great. Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. So that's us. That's us. That was the podcast without portfolio.
Some contributed more active travel things than others, but that's okay. It's fine. We all bring different things, don't we? That's why it's why.
Wow.
Sorry.
Ned.
Sorry. Okay. I didn't mean to.
Very good. Okay. Can I do the regular scripted outro or am I okay to freestyle something?
You can do whatever
podcast
you like.
Podcast without portfolio.
If you want to freestyle.
I'm going to freestyle.
Okay, go.
Kind of crazy like that.
Go on.
Do remember that you can support this podcast because we do it all for nothing.
Yes.
It might fund a trip to Milton Keynes, which would be thrilling beyond measure.
Big time.
The way that you can support us and keep us going and motivated and give us a little bit of pocket money to spend on the podcast is by supporting us for a very small amount on Patreon. Follow the link in the show notes for all of that. But in the meantime, if you're not prepared to give us a couple of quid, just carry on listening. That's a service
as well.
And if you have the time and the inclination, rate us, review us, and that all helps with the algorithm. And follow us at Pod Streets Ahead. But in the meantime, I've been Ned Bolting.
I've been Adam Tranter.
That person.
Our
over
editor
there.
Has been Claire Mansell.
Claire Mansell has been the editor.
And I'm Laura Laker.
This is good.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.